This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Headlines at 7:45, thereabouts. John McClain jumping in with us at the top of the hour as we roll on a Wednesday here on Sports Radio 610.
Did you ever think you'd have $2 trillion, Sean? Did you ever think you'd have $2 trillion? I never did.
No, I don't know what I'm going to do with it. I could use a new set of headphones.
I'm going to squander it on cocaine and hookers.
Yeah. $2 trillion. Yeah.
Brandy will probably be like, hookers, Seth? And I'm like, listen, we're that rich now that you don't care. We're gonna go to some of these Eyes Wide Shut type parties. It's just going to be our new life.
Yeah. Yeah. You just keep quiet. The lettuce is going to keep rolling in here, babe. Just let me do what
trillion.
I want to do. And you get your part of the $2 trillion. Don't worry about it.
I don't even know how many commas that is. That's like four commas in $2 trillion.
Seth, it's like the Michael Scott Paper Company episode where they make Michael Scott the offer for the company for $60,000 and he turns it down and Ryan goes, you just cost me $60,000.
Either that or just him, Michael Scott thinking he was going to be so rich with a three-way split of $60,000. Yeah.
he was like panting. He's like, we're so rich. $60,000. We know what the Texans offseason has looked like so far, and it's Seth, I can't find a single article that is just not making fun of the Texans. Like, Pro Football Focus did their best move and worst move for all 32 teams, and all 31 other teams had a best move. For the Texans, it was just three ellipses dots for their best move.
Oh, come on.
What? I'm just telling you. I'm just the messenger.
I gotta tell you, this Eric Turner is intriguing to me, damn it.
His name's Eric Murray, which goes to show how great a signing it was.
Excuse me, yeah.
So, what do you think? Let's start with Tim Kelly. There are two brand new coordinators for the Texans, first-time coordinators. Tim Kelly he was the OC last year, but this is his first time being a play caller. So this is really, I'm looking at this as Tim Kelly's first season of being a real offensive coordinator. We hope. And, you know, until Bill O'Brien decides to start calling plays.
Training wheels off.
Anthony, what's that?
The training wheels are off.
That's right. The training wheels are off for Tim Kelly. Anthony Weaver, absolutely first time defensive coordinator. I'll start with Tim Kelly. What do you think Tim Kelly is saying to himself as he's watching the Texans make their moves on the offensive side of the ball?
I think he's saying, for one, I don't know, man. Like, honestly, let me tell you this, Sean. This exercise is hard for me because I don't know how much they've bought into the Easterbee cult. Because there's definitely a cult movement going on there, which I'm for. Like, I feel like Clemson has some cult-like qualities to it, and it works really, really well. I'm all for having a cult-like atmosphere. So it all comes into, all right, is Tim Kelly drinking the Kool-Aid? Is Tim Kelly believing that, okay, obviously it's a loss of overall talent if we don't have DeAndre Hopkins, but is it a net gain because we're going to have more guys practicing? We'll have Randall Cobb, who's a genuine slot, which we've been looking for forever. Wasn't working out with Kiki QT, didn't work with Braxton Miller. Go on down the list of failures at slot for the Texans. Now we have multiple options and multiple different levels of the defense. including David Johnson as a running back and receiving threat. I think that Tim Kelly has probably, I think he's drinking the Kool-Aid, and I think he's all about like, yeah, now I can run this finely tuned machine. We're going to practice more, and Deshaun will have more well-defined options because he actually has a guy in Randall Cobb that theoretically can get open because he has an extra outlet back in David Johnson. I think that's what Tim Kelly's thinking. I think he was probably, I'm guessing he was on board. I'm not saying I agree with that, but I'm guessing that's what Tim Kelly is thinking.
Let me take the Tim Kelly approval to a different level or another angle to it and see if you think that this is a possibility. Because we know very little about Tim Kelly, because when he meets with the media, he doesn't say very much. So the only thing we really know about Tim Kelly is that Bill O'Brien really likes the guy a lot. He was a grad assistant with him at Penn State, and he's brought him here and he's kept him. He's brought him and he's kept him. And Bill O'Brien has not kept everybody that he's brought with him. Bill O'Brien has made changes from time to time on the staff. Tim Kelly has continued to ascend on that staff to where now Bill O'Brien is trusting him with calling plays. Is there an element too for Tim Kelly to where, hey, look, if the offense bogs down, then maybe not all the blame is going to be on me. Look, they traded our best player during the offseason. Whereas if the offense actually improves, and remarkably, Bill O'Brien has actually set Tim Kelly up in a way to where there is a lot of room for improvement. Even with an offense that has Deshaun freaking Watson at quarterback, there's still a ton of room for improvement with this offense, where Tim Kelly is actually set up in a weird way to be in a kind of a quasi no lose situation. And also, Seth, if Tim Kelly's management style or coaching style mirrors that of his mentor, Bill O'Brien, we know that Bill O'Brien tries to look a little smarter than maybe he should try to look at times. My guess is maybe there's part of Tim Kelly possibly that looks at it like, ooh, there's no Hopkins anymore. I get to tinker a little bit and show off some of these other things that I can think of and wrinkles I can put into the offense, that it actually appeals to sort of I'm struggling with the adjective, but you know what I mean? This side of him where he gets to kind of mess around with the offense a little bit.
Yeah. And this is the question I've always had, is the fact that the Texans didn't score an opening drive touchdown until the backup quarterback AJ McCarron was actually in charge in the 17th week of the season. Is that a Tim Kelly problem or is that a Bill O'Brien problem? Because if you go out with a relatively, whether it's scripted or it's a relatively loose script or a game plan of what you want to do, and every team does it a little bit differently perhaps, is that more an indication that Tim Kelly's game plan wasn't ready and wasn't right or was too predictable? Or is it an indication that maybe Bill O'Brien tinkered with the opening script a little too much, and then as Tim Kelly got to do more of his adjustments and his calling the game, that the Texans would get it going? Because they tended to be a lot better in the second, third, and fourth quarter. The optimistic side of me wants to believe that the first couple series were a joint effort between Bill O'Brien and Tim Kelly, and after that, Tim Kelly more took over the reins and then was acting like an offensive coordinator, and that maybe Tim Kelly, by having more authority and more control over the actual offense, will do better on opening drives. That's the optimistic part of me. So there's that. Yeah. And yeah, I think that I think you're exactly right. Tim Kelly it's kind of a no lose situation. If you lose DeAndre Hopkins, the best weapon, and you end up better than you did last year as an offense, then yeah, it's going to look really good for Tim Kelly. I don't know. I feel like Tim Kelly might end up, if it works out for him as an offensive coordinator, it might end up being a really good situation for Bill O'Brien. Cause I think of him as maybe like a Pete Carmichael Jr. there in New Orleans, where is there ever any talk about Pete Carmichael Jr. going anywhere else as a head coach?
No.
Does he interview?
Zero.
Right. So he's the offensive coordinator, but he works really closely with Sean Payton. You know, Sean Payton's the architect of that offense, and it works out really well. If Tim Kelly is indeed a bright young coach that can do things as an offensive coordinator, maybe just given his personality and everything, maybe he doesn't even want to be a head coach, that he's happy just being in that role. And that could be a good long-term solution to what is sometimes it feels like Bill O'Brien just being too much of a control freak and perhaps having too much influence over the offense.
I want to ask you in a minute if you think O'Brien's actually going to be able to do all this delegating we're talking about, but let's talk about Weaver because that's what we brought into the segment here. What do you think Anthony Weaver is thinking watching the Texans go through the last couple of weeks of the offseason?
I think that he's got to be thinking there's a pass rusher out there, an interior pass rusher, somebody that can rush the passer from an interior role. The guy that's out there that I've started watching a little bit because I saw somebody mention him is Shelby Harris. He's a defensive tackle. A defensive lineman for the Broncos, he's a different body type than DJ Reader. He's only about 305, 310 pounds, but he does a lot of the things that I know Anthony Weaver likes. He plays with his hands really well. He plays with good technique. A lot of times he's a run first player. He's concerned about stopping the run and then he converts to a pass rush, but he's got some ability as a pass rusher. And I think this is a guy that might make, $5 million a year, but actually replace some of that pass rush production that DJ Reader had, maybe be an add on to it because he's a different body type guy. Somebody like that, I'd be fine with because they need to replace half of the non JJ Watt defensive line pressures on that team last year came from DJ Reader. The Lunch Pail crew had, I want to say, 65 total pressures, somewhere around there. DJ Reader had about 35 of those pressures. So between Brandon Harris, Carlos Watkins, and all those other guys, Angelo Blackson, the large majority of the push came from DJ Reader. They need to get somebody like Shelby Harris or maybe Ndamukong Suh, who's still out there, I believe. Somebody like that that can be an interior pass rusher.
I can't hear Seth. We may be talking over each other right now.
I'm just quiet and waiting for you
to
talk.
Hey, Seth.
Yep.
How are you?
I'm good, buddy. We just had a little bit of a technical glitch there. I got to be honest. This has been, with all three of us in our respective homes, Jonesy and Sean and myself are all in our own abodes. This is really the only second glitch we've had in this several hours of radio we've already done. Well, 2 hours of radio we've already done. So I'm going to take this and be okay with it.
Yeah. No. Hey, you take your couple shots of whiskey before the show, calm your nerves, and then you're good to go. We're about to add a fourth party at the top of the hour in John McClain. So we'll see how that goes. But
also our boss is informing us that the listeners could hear us as we were trying to figure out what the hell happened.
Oh,
so,
cool.
Yeah. So just be mindful of that, that if you hear silence, that there might be thousands of people out there actually listening to you.
I make That'll sure, Seth, this is a good rule to live by here. As you know, there's a button for the device we're using. There's a button for connect and disconnect. If the button is red, do not curse. Only curse if the button is green.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
Red means stop. Yep. That's the rule. We'll get to headlines here in a second. I think when we disconnected, you were in the middle of talking about Anthony Weaver and the defensive line and trying to find a replacement for DJ Reader.
Yeah. And I was saying there's still guys out there that aren't household names, but I think they can provide some push. Now, and Ndamukong Suh is a household name, but who knows whether he's Bill O'Brien worthy? Who knows what he wants in a 1-year contract or 2-year contract? But the guy that I was talking about, Shelby Harris from the Broncos, I think he's a guy that could be had at a pretty good salary, a lot less than what DJ Reader was going to get and did end up getting, but they could provide some pass rush and some push. You need somebody to complement JJ Watt there with some kind of an interior pass rush. And I'm just not sure they have it right now. I like Amenihu a lot. I like his versatility, but I don't know if his strength anytime soon is going to be as an interior pass rusher. He's a big framed guy, but kind of like a bigger, lankier, big framed guy. And yeah. It could develop. I mean, he uses his hands well and everything, but we just have to see that. So between Amenihu potentially developing as an interior pass rusher and a guy like Shelby Harris or any of these other kind of journeyman plus type of guys that are out there, I think they could get a better interior pass rush than they had last year.
All right, let's roll some headlines here before we get to
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
The big headline over the last 24 hours in the NFL, Seth, Cam Newton released by the Carolina Panthers as they tried to get a trade partner. I say they kind of delegated it to Cam and his people. Like, hey, go find a trade for yourself. Bears and the Chargers reportedly the teams that they engaged in those talks. If you were the Bears, would you rather have Cam Newton or Nick Foles? Because unfortunately for the Bears, Cam Newton became available after they made the trade for Nick Foles.
I would rather have Cam Newton. I think Cam Newton has been the MVP of the league at one point in his career. Cam Newton's a more consistently, when healthy, good quarterback than Nick Foles is. Nick Foles has never shown that he can do it for an entire regular season. I also think this. I think that Mitchell Trubisky does not deserve to be a starting quarterback right now. And if Cam Newton came in and played a year and then maybe retired after that, or he got banged up or got injured, I think it might be good for Mitchell Trubisky. He was overdrafted. He was taken. He's so mentally soft that he's complaining about what's on the television during the week. All those things. He needs a little bit of a comeuppance. He needs a little bit of an ego check. And I think Cam Newton might be the guy to do it. So that would have been better. Nick Foles is too nice to a fault. I think Nick Foles is the perfect backup to come into a lot of different situations. But I think up there in Chicago, where you're trying to use some competition to try to spur Mitchell Trubisky on, I think they should have had a guy who's a little bit more of a jerk than Nick Foles. Which, by the way, Marcus Mariota, same thing with Derek Carr. Marcus Mariota is talking about, like, oh, this is Derek Carr's team. I love Derek Carr. Everything's awesome. Yeah. Give me a little bit more backstabbing. Give me some drama. There's no football, there's no baseball, there's no basketball going on right now. At least give me some drama, damn it.
Yeah, Mariota's always been too nice. All right, second headline. Probably the top non-quarterback, non-clowny free agent on the market the last couple days has been Jets wide receiver Robbie Anderson, a real deep threat who's kind of come into his own the last couple of years. Signs a two-year, $20 million contract with the Carolina Panthers to go play for his former college head coach, Matt Rhule. He played at Temple, Robbie Anderson did back in the day. We know he can stretch the field. Seth, would you rather have Randall Cobb at 3 years, $27 million, or Robbie Anderson at 2 years, $20
million? I want Robbie Anderson. I just wanted to give an honest thought about it for a while. Look, Sean, I don't know if I'm going crazy or if I'm just deluding myself, but I'm talking myself into Randall Cobb over these past few days just because I saw what he was capable of doing when he had good wide receiver talent around him. You know, when I would make some excuses for Randall Cobb in Green Bay the last few years because we've seen exactly the soap opera that was Green Bay and what was going on, and that if Will Fuller can stretch the field, if Randall Cobb can be a more reliable slot receiver than Deshaun Watson has really had. You know, Deshaun Watson's most reliable slot receiver has been DeAndre Hopkins. That's not an ideal situation. So I'm okay with Randall Cobb at this point. Robbie Anderson would have been a lot more electrifying. I think Robbie Anderson would have turned other people into better slot receivers because he would have helped stretch the field with Will Fuller, especially when Will Fuller's out. But it's not as huge of a difference as I thought it might be. We're talking about, all right, you're paying Randall Cobb more than you should have, but I can see the value he's going to have for this offense.
Yep. All right, next headline, we go to baseball. And Seth, man, in some ways I feel like the Astros have dodged a couple of bullets here in the last couple of days. We know that Chris Sale was announced over the last week or two that he's going to get Tommy John surgery. Sale is a guy that I know a lot of Astro fans wanted the team to look at making a deal for a couple of years ago in 2017 when Sale's contract was still very, very manageable, and he was truly one of the best pitchers in baseball. They didn't make that deal. They made the trade for Verlander. It's obviously worked out. And then another name that's come up over the last couple of years at the trade deadline for a lot of teams, including the Astros, is Noah Syndergaard of the New York Mets. Jeff Passan reporting yesterday that the Mets right-hander is going to undergo Tommy John surgery for a torn ulnar collateral ligament in his right elbow. He'll miss all of whatever action there's going to be in 2020 and likely in 2021 as well. The coronavirus, a big story in MLB, and Tommy John surgery, number two behind that right now, Seth.
Is it clear? In the initial reports, I didn't see anything reported about when he tore it or how he tore it. Has there been any more information on that?
I don't see anything in this article that I'm linked to here right now, but it would be a very Met thing for a Met starting pitcher to tear his UCL while Major League Baseball is not allowing any baseball to go on.
It said he was experienced discomfort in his elbow before spring training was suspended March 12th. An MRI revealed the UCL tear. So he knew it was, they knew there was an issue already. And apparently, I don't know why they, well, I mean, obviously it might have been slow to get to the doctor because this was all happening kind of right around when everything was happening. So, you know, Syndergaard, everybody was raving about what kind of shape he was in coming in this season, all kinds of shirtless pictures and whatnot. You got to be careful with the shirtless pictures. Guys revealing their new toned bodies and everything. Seems like 50% of the time it doesn't work out. So this one's on you, Syndergaard.
Yeah, yeah. In an odd way, Seth is thin-shaming Noah Syndergaard.
Yeah.
In-shape-shaming Noah Syndergaard. You know, it's Seth, when I see these pitchers getting surgery, I think of Justin Verlander, who obviously is not undergoing Tommy John surgery, but he underwent groin surgery. I do wonder if there are Major League Baseball players who have little kind of, you know, figuratively nicks and cuts going on their body right now, little things that need to be cleaned up before the season, that maybe this gives some of those guys a 2 or 3 year or 2 or 3 month window to kind of do those things in. You know, just stuff they would normally just play through, like, hey, you know, I'm going to have at least until like June. I may as well go get a scope on this or that.
You know what it might end up being for a guy like Lance McCullers, who has a hard time making it through an entire season, who's also coming off of Tommy John surgery. This might be perfect for him because he's going to come back. Now, it's going to get dicey because Major League Baseball is talking about having 2 doubleheaders per week if and when they come back. So how do you manage your pitchers there? They're talking about expanding the pitching rosters perhaps. But for a guy like Lance McCullers, a shorter season maybe gives him an opportunity to go through the entire season, go through the playoffs, and be completely healthy and maybe kind of ramp his way up to not overdoing it in a year after Tommy John surgery. So there's one more silver lining, hopefully, in all of this. It might be the best way to limit Lance McCullers and keep Lance McCullers from being gung-ho and wanting to pitch 125 innings.
There you go. Power of positivity, people. That's what it's all about as we roll on with headlines. The next headline, we talked about Peyton Manning turning down Monday Night Football. Now we get some more details as to what exactly it was he was turning down. Man, is he playing hard to get or what? Peyton Manning turning down an offer from ESPN to work as part of the Monday Night Football crew as a color commentator, according to the New York Post's Andrew Marchand. And here is what Marchand had to say. Sources say the overriding factor was whether Manning finally wanted to enter the broadcast booth and commit to the weekly schedule in the fall. The answer remains no. He declined Monday Night Football. He's been turning down every network since he retired in 2016. The big nugget in here, Seth, is that Marchand reports that ESPN's offer to Manning may have topped Tony Romo's record 10-year, $140 million CBS deal if it combined his Monday Night Football salary with his ESPN Plus shows, Peyton Places, and Details. So Peyton Manning turned down record-setting, not just turned down Monday Night Football and the brand that comes with it, turned down record-setting money in the process.
You know what? I'd have to see how old are his kids. Maybe he ends up entering the booth once his kids are out of high school because I think he's obviously gives a damn about his kids. I was about to say he's a great father. I have no clue. I'm not going to be those people who's like, yeah, he's a great father. I don't know if he's a great father or not, but he seems to care about his kids. So
right.
I wonder if it's as simple as that. The guy's got as much money as he wants, and you might say, like, you might scoff at, oh, what, the schedule's too tough for you? Well, I mean, for Monday Night Football, you're traveling on the weekends. You're doing your interviews on Friday and Saturday with the guys or Saturdays and Sundays with the guys before the game. And that's when your kids are involved in sports. You're going to miss a whole lot of high school football games or whatever sports his kids are in. So it might be as simple as that. And maybe once but then they're going to go to college. They might play sports in college. He's never going in the booth. That's it. Not going to happen.
Scratch it off. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, Seth, you talked about Snopes.com yesterday as we move on to the next headline. This feels like something, just reading the first 2 paragraphs of this story, this feels like something I would have to go check on Snopes to see if it really happened. Ole Miss sent an email to donors on Tuesday in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic, asking them to consider adding the university to their wills. The email, which came from the Ole Miss Office of Development, started circulating on Twitter from a user called @inessentials. The account tweets have since become protected. The media from said tweet was later screen grabbed and further shared on Twitter. But I'm looking at it right here where Ole Miss has said there is a common expression that, quote, change is the only constant in life. We often experience this with our careers, even our families. Sometimes situations change around us and developments in our health, laws, and or financial landscape present new challenges. In those times, it's beneficial to consider revisiting the content of your will, especially if it was designed years ago and now needs attention. They go on to essentially say, hey, if you're going to redo your will, hottie toddy, remember us over here. Seth, is this tacky? Is this tacky or is this resourceful?
Oh, of course it's tacky. But I'm wondering here, though, I'm very, very careful with this because Mad Radio, the now defunct Mad Radio, was taken in by fake news regarding the Hugh Freeze scandal with Ole Miss. When somebody wrote this, somebody wrote a letter. Basically, it was something supposedly from the university, I think, that made it look like they were defending Hugh Freeze, and it ended up being complete fake news. So I've got a history here, so I'm not gonna mess up and say that I believe. Now, would I put it past a lot of these alumni offices? No, I would not, because that's what they do. Like they try to get you to bequeath a certain amount, pledge a certain amount. You can put it into a trust that you can live off of the income. That is a big part of donations to colleges these days. People might say, okay, I'm going to put $10 million into a trust, and I'm going to take income from that trust until I die. But when I die, the money's then going to go to Ole Miss. So it's not like they're treading in completely unfamiliar waters when they start talking about asking people to bequeath money in their will or anything.
Jonesy, you can take the music down. I just think it's funny. I'm looking at the screen cap of the email. Like they allude to things like, you know, the changing landscape and the world that we live in and how different things can inject themselves into the into the conversation. They never directly mention, at least not that I see here in the email, they never say coronavirus or COVID-19. So good for them for not totally, you know, like they kind of sort of dance around it a little bit. But, hey, we're tacky, but we don't want to be too tacky.
It's an old, the letter I'm talking about, I want to say it was somebody made it look like it was a letter from Hugh Freeze. We'll find that. That's a funny read. We'll have to read that in the next segment or after, maybe after John's gone.
Yep. Yeah, we'll do that maybe in the 9 o'clock hour. Bookmark it. I think Jonesy just likes this music. I think he just likes this, like tapping his foot to the beat of it. Or maybe he's trying to go Jonesy, get his John McClane.
Jonesy there may have go. Lost control. There you go.
Yeah.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.